Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Leith Tarling. Leith is a behaviour support consultant for Catholic Education Western Australia, providing support for the organisation's 150 plus schools. Leith's previous role was as a principal team teach trainer for Asia Pacific, providing training services for the Education Department of Western Australia and disability support providers. And today, Leith and I are talking about understanding my child's behaviour. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Leith, how are you?
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well. I believe this is the furthest away one of our guests has been. You're over in Perth, right?
Yeah, travelling halfway around the world. Yeah, Perth. Sunny, well, currently sunny mid-afternoon Fremantle. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Well, it's summer here in the UK and we've been hit by some pretty outstanding heat waves and things. So I'm off to the beach later. So I was thinking of you. but we're really happy to have you on the podcast today. Really excited to chat further about the topic that we're talking about. And today we're talking about how to understand your child's behaviour. I know this is something and a thread that comes up on some of the podcast episodes. So I'm really interested in going into a bit more depth with you. Leith, I wondered if you could start off the episode just by giving a book recommendation on the topic.
Yeah, certainly, Claire. My first contact point in relation to the things I'm going to be speaking about today was a chance reading of Ross Greene's Lost and Found. And it wasn't something that came across as a bolt of lightning. It's got a very, very simple cover, you know, addressing challenging behaviour. And I thought, well, I've read, you know, quite a number of books on addressing challenging behaviour. Let's add it to the list and see what it has to say. It had some very, very unique perspectives that I was less familiar with. And perspectives I found to be really, really powerful in the domain where I was working and the team I was working with. So very, very happy to share some of those ideas today.
Yeah, we were just chatting off air and I was going, oh, I've definitely read something by the author. And I have to read a lot for the work that I do and my work supporting parents and carers. And I do remember reading one of his books, and I don't often do this, but I was underlining certain quotes, and some of his things were actually really profound. And, you know, I was quite moved by some of the things that he was mentioning. So it's a good one, isn't it, to look at his work?
It certainly is. And one of those quotes I can refer to here, and it's one I would have used at two meetings today, and I used it in both meetings. And that's a quote that, in Greene's words, I probably not verbatim, but I'll certainly give it my best shot. And he was addressing behaviour as a loud signal of an unmet expectation or a difficulty. And I find that an interesting quote, because in a lot of cases, what's actually drawing us in is the observable behaviour. That's the information. Yet I think what Greene's quote, what I find very interesting about it is it takes us to look one step further and go upstream. And yes, we do see the behaviour, but what, going a little further upstream, what's the unmet expectation or what's the difficulty that gives rise to those feelings within the child that then are expressed with those behaviours?
Yeah, so the idea really that those signals in the behaviour are a signal for support might be a way of framing it.
Certainly, and I think if we're in a helping position, if we've got that helping context, if we're a mum or a dad or a carer, or we've got some other role of caring in that moment, we sort of face a choice. We can respond to the behaviour per se, or we can also then just take that additional moment and then just provide that space to think, yeah, I see the behaviour, there's the loud signal, but what's the difficulty that gives rise to that? And if we can address the difficulty that gives rise to that behaviour, then we might be closer to then working with the young person about moving towards the resolution of the difficulty. And yeah. And looking at the whole origin is we've got an unsolved problem. The young person at that point's got an unsolved problem. And yeah, the behavior can be prickly, it can be annoying, it can really at times challenge us because it's challenging the child at that moment. Mm. But if we've got that helping relationship at that point, what's the space that we have to look at that unsolved problem and then to begin working at what that unsolved problem is?
Absolutely. And I really like the language that we're getting to there, that it's a problem that needs solving, not that the child's the problem or, you know, whatever underneath it is the problem. It's the idea that, you know, we can solve it together. And that's our role really as being carers. I wondered, Leith, if you could tell us a bit more about your experience with this topic.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I could certainly share. So I work in high needs behaviour support and have done so for, I think, for longer than I can remember, but it's somewhere around 20 plus years. And prior to that, some of the understandings and structures that I had built around it were very much of a functional behaviour lens. So in other words, if we're looking at behaviour, what's the lens of what's the problem behaviour? What does that behaviour serve? Is it gain or is it avoid? And if it is gain or avoid, are we looking at, is it related to sensory? Is it related to social? Is it related to peers in terms of context within the environment? And then I found myself reflecting, thinking that adults spend a lot of time thinking about what the problem is for that young person. Yet what I was challenged with by Green's work is collaborate with the child, have some information from the child, have the opportunity to state what your concern is as well, but then go that one step deeper and examine what is the unsolved problem and can we enter into that problem-solving space with them? Yes, you know, in the moment of challenge, and I mean, in the moment of the tantrum, that's not the place to get collaborative. That's the place to manage that particular situation. But at a later point, is there scope to actually work with that young person collaboratively and have those genuine discussions and get to the heart as far upstream as we can about what that difficulty is?
Yeah, I think that collaboration, we're not doing it to a young person, child, we're doing it with them, that support. And I think that's so key for parents, carers, isn't it? Because we might have parents, carers listening who might be having some behaviors at home that they're finding, you know, really, really challenging and you know, it's pretty tough. So what are some of the kinds of things that parents, carers can do to kind of understand what is beneath the behavior? What can they do to unpeel those layers, as it were?
To unpack the layers and sort of get to the heart. Well, I think primarily one thing that did strike me about Green's work is he spoke of it as a crisis prevention model. So there's the separation from the moment to then the follow-up that happens afterwards. So in the moment, of course, that is always a matter of how we get through those moments safely for the child and safely for us. And then when we have that capacity to have a discussion and to open up and notice what the difficulty is. Now, interesting there, just the beginning of that statement where we're holding those discussions, you know, or talking to our loved one, you know, we're actually saying, we've noticed you've got a difficulty with, you know, we're getting to the heart of what the difficulty is. And then we're seeking as much information from them as possible. And when we've got that information, then we're in a position to then do a share. And well, to understand the problem a little better and get all the information. I mean, there's been so many times when once I've held those conversations or even, you know, the teachers I work with hold those conversations, they have this giant aha moment because suddenly they've come to a realization because there's been some information provided by the young person themselves that's critical to understanding what's going on. So the young person experiencing our loved one, the person we're working with, they hold information. and getting access to that information is really important. And then, of course, sharing why we deem it important that that expectation's met. But then the, okay, what can we do? What can we do to problem solve this? And then working together through that beautiful, you know, through that beautiful caring lens of a helping relationship. I mean, it's that is where that the bonds of trust, where caring is demonstrated through that motion of that helping relationship. And what's more powerful than helping our loved ones, you know, through their difficult moments, through the context of a helping relationship? And if I put that to the side of then just merely responding to behaviour, it just puts us in a slightly different space.
That, in being in tune with the individual, with the child, young person, it's really interesting. You got me thinking then about an individual that, or a child, young person that I've supported in the family environment, and she was really different in one of the sessions that I run. And we could label that as behaviour that challenges, but actually I'm not really sure what it was. I just noticed that she was really different. And there was a week gap before I got to see her again, and it wasn't a successful session. And then the next week that I saw her, that exactly what you were saying there, in my caring role with her, I was able to say, I noticed that you were different, not labelling, you know, that, you know, she was a pain in the backside, or, you know, whatever words that I might use, which objectively, you know, you might think in the moment when you're being quite emotive. But I'd had a chance to be able to cool myself down. I'd had a week, and I know parents, carers won't have the opportunity of a whole week to calm down from, you know, difficult situations. But that conversation that I had with her was so rich in getting that information, exactly what you said. So it's really interesting to hear that and hear about those phrases. I've noticed, really like that as a structure.
It's, I think it's a very human essence. It comes to that basis of it's, and I'm going to go back to a point that you were saying earlier, Claire, about the fact that we're not doing something to someone to manage them. You know, we're not having someone do something for, dare I say it, their purposes plus ours. We're getting to that notion of, you know, what it is to be a person, you know, what it is to be a young person negotiating sometimes difficult expectations. And what more beautiful role can we have than to help someone through those expectations? Because, you know, part of learning is frustration. So part of frustration may get to that point when that frustration becomes behaviour. And then drawing that conversation then back to, what gave rise to those feelings? What was the thing that was occurring at that point? And I know, you know, previously, you know, I spoke about the functional model of gain or avoid. Clear part of that is the antecedent. What was the triggering event? So I think that the notion of what the difficulty is has always been there. But in this case, what I do very much appreciate about the work with the model of collaborative and proactive solutions is you start to then look at, you know, what's, go upstream, where's the difficulty? Can we codify the difficulty? But then can we have a helping relationships conversation?
I love the metaphor going upstream. That's a really nice visual. And I'm thinking with going upstream, that you talked about skills-based. And I've heard the term before. I've got a good gist around what that might look like. But share with the listeners what we mean by skills-based.
In a very, very base level sense, I'm going to equate it to the operating software at that point. What's our capacity? What's our working memory? What's the tools of language we have at that point? And what's the tools of making sense of the world? What's the flexibility we hold? What's our ability to negotiate through some fairly big emotions while we're working on something? And we know that's a human development. We know that, you know, some of those neurocognitive skills, I mean, we can put a big label of a neurocognitive skill around it, but it's interesting, you know, what does a neurocognitive skill look like when it becomes at the difficulty level? Well, it could be the fact that, look, I can't tolerate frustration at the moment with this bit of learning I'm about to do, or this thing that I can't do. I can't tie my shoelaces up. It might be that that frustration sits there and I can't work through that frustration. but then it overwhelms me and takes me to that point when the behavior occurs. Yeah, in a broad level, I'd talk about how, you know, those tools on how we negotiate our work.
Yeah, those tools that we can help support children, young people with, that we can role model, I suppose, some of the ways to, I guess, cope with those emotions. But we're also talking about building a skills base so maybe that individual understands when that frustration is occurring through triggers. Is that the kind of thing?
Oh, well expressed. Very, very well expressed. It's about knowing the situation then, and then thinking of a way through that, about what that plan and that movement towards an adaptive behaviour response is. And knowing that sometimes if the feelings then take us to a point when and they are expressed and then the maladaptive things occur, we've got a choice, or they have a choice. Because clearly I think for some young people they can get in a habit loop with their responses.
Mm.
I have this difficulty. It's the same difficulty I had last week. Now I've got those feelings of frustration, which were bigger than last week's feelings of frustration. I know an easy way out. This is what I do. If I do this, that all goes away. But what's our context of the helping relationship there? And I think there it's about getting information, having them talk through, you know, provide us what that information is. We then share why it's important, and then the thinking. What I wonder if there's something we can do about this. I wonder what we can do. And leaving that in the domain of the child to think through and then support them as they problem solve. And that, you know, beautiful expression that we don't see, but we might have seen it on GIFs on YouTube and so forth, of that synaptic pathway from, you know, brain cell to brain cell, new pathway, new way of doing things, new skill.
And it's that practice, Leith, isn't it? So absolutely. I know... At the moment, I work in a school for those on the autistic spectrum, huge range, 11 to 16-year-olds. And sometimes when we're trying to learn a new skill, we might practice 10, 15 times. And that might just be small social skills, like practicing eye contact, different ways of dealing with frustration, using some stress toys and things. And what I've noticed, in particularly in that role, it'd been a while since I'd worked in or in a provision that serves those on the autistic spectrum, I forgot that it's actually quite hard to learn new skills and to change those pathways. And I suppose thinking about parents, carers, professionals listening, how important is that repetition? What might that look like at home?
Oh, if I think here, there's a little phrase that that comes to mind, and it's one, of course, I've heard. You know, we always reference things we've heard in other places, and this is one, and it's the notion of process over outcome, and that we're seeking an outcome, but to invest in the process and repeated opportunities, and we know that those repeated opportunities, we have the frustrations of things working, things not working, around in circles, we're wondering what that progress looks like. But that notion of just focusing on the process and that repeated opportunity to experience for that young person to build and groove that skill. And it's a beautiful thing. I was just reflecting on what you were talking about there with the young people that you're working with. I mean, what beautiful work that is. I mean, you're helping them with skills that they are going to use to negotiate through a sometimes complex set of expectations they're going to face. And they're in that adolescent phase. They'll be facing new expectations, sometimes more complex expectations. And their capacity and the skills that they bring into that space, critical tools. So, that would be my thought there, the repetition, and also knowing that we're continually focusing on a process, knowing that our outcome, short-term, longer-term.
I think that's really important for both parents, carers, professionals to know. And, yeah, that process that we're going through, and it might be frustrating. I know I've been definitely frustrated both in my own family trying to get through the process because I want the outcome. I want, you know, the individuals that I work with or my family members, I want everything to be plain sailing, yes. Because, you know, that's what we want, isn't it? But actually, absolutely, allowing people to focus on the process, I think that you've put that brilliantly. I think that's really important and helpful, because one thing I haven't asked you and I wanted to just quickly shoehorn in before we go to top tips is, about parents, carers being able to support themselves as well. So sometimes I think on the podcast, I'm a bit guilty of just focusing on the child, young person, but behind that child or young person being supported is the helper or the carer, the parents, the teacher, whoever that helper is. And actually, it's important that we look after ourselves in that role.
I could not have expressed that better. In fact, that was a thought that was sort of started to cross my mind here, and you've elaborated on it beautifully. The need for the adult, for the carer, for the person that has that responsibility to also take care of themselves, and that giving themselves permission to be patient, giving themselves permission to take time in that process, giving themselves permission to have a setback. And I know that sounds easy. It sounds so easy me saying it. In the midst of a storm, it certainly can't feel that way. But that notion of the importance of just coming back to center and coming from a place of care and coming, from a place of love to just be with the child and then know that your presence there is actually making a difference, even though it doesn't feel like it in that moment. Being there is so, so important.
And I will draw us back, I suppose, to a point that you made earlier, that believing in the process and that change is possible. And I think that's a really handy script for us all, whether we're parents, carers or professionals listening. That process, there is hope. There's always hope with it, and believing in it. Leith, I can't believe how quickly time has gone. I've been really good recently at being pretty on time with the podcast. Do you mind just finishing off just with three top tips for the listeners?
Yeah, and they're very much in mind with the things I've been sharing. My first would be to be open of mind. So when we're seeing behaviour, when we're seeing something, of course, if it's unsafe, intervention straight away. But just be curious about what you see. To rush to judgment may mean that we're missing something. So being curious about what we see and always say, what might be happening here? Then, of course, now we go to the self-care bit for adults or for carers, just breathing through it. Now here, the reason I say breathe through it is it gives us something to do, because what are we going to do when we're seeing this behavior? If we focus on the behavior, coming right back and going, okay, yeah, I'm here, but I'm going to breathe through it. And then afterwards, when we're thinking and ruminating about it, okay, what's the skill my loved one needs, or what's the skill the young person needs here? Spending some time afterwards thinking, what do we need to focus on? What's the skill they need and what's the expectation that they faced and the skill they need to meet that expectation?
Fantastic. All of that really sums up nicely the route that we took in our conversations. So that's a really great place to finish this episode. Just a quick thank you, Leith, for taking time out of your day to chat to us today. And I really hope we get to catch up soon.
Claire, it's awesome. I very much appreciate the opportunity. Absolute privilege.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.